June 28, 2021. So watch for Peter Ocean.
Thank you. Thank you.
Watt for Pedro show. Happy Monday, people. We started with, this is good to know. Well, maybe not good to know, but it's at a John Coltrane session, they can blow clams. So this is Naima, but it ain't the whole thing. They had to stop. I don't know who blew the clam, but you can hear Rudy Van Gelder call for the next take. And then we had Tom Dill solo Surge. You could tell people I'm not man alone. Brother Manson, Love Grotto on the Pleasure Point, a couple miles south. But through those Estonian software engineers with their Skype invention, I got Mr. Tom Dill. Welcome aboard, Tom. Okay. And triple, the name of that tune was Triple X.
Oh, yeah.
Now, when I think of Triple X, I think of those posts on the street in Amsterdam. Because in the old days, right, people couldn't read and write most. And so they had symbols for the towns. And I think Amsterdam's was Triple X. And that ended up being like kind of the symbol for X-rated movies and shit.
Oh, that's where that came from.
Yeah, I think
so. That Triple X on that title just refers to that particular Surge instrument is something I put together a couple of years ago. And it's three layers of triple wide panels, which is a little bit geeky. Nobody needs to know any more than that, but it's Triple X.
But you're saying is pay no attention to that man behind the curtain.
That's right.
Tom, I want to learn a little bit about your journey through music. Can you bring us your earliest musical recollection?
I'll tell you the story. This is one of the very earliest, and this is a story about the power of sound. Which is that when I was 5 years old, we moved to a farm in the middle of Indiana, and we're kind of poor, and couldn't pay rent, weren't eating very much. My dad decided to raise some pigs. So I don't know if the pigs were already there or if he bought them, but anyway, we had pigs on this farm. And where the pigs grow up, where they raise the little piglets, is in these little houses that look kind of like big dog houses. And what would happen is sows, the mothers, would end up pushing them all over the field. And they'd get all scattered around. And my dad didn't like that. So he chained them together about 18 inches apart or maybe less than that. And the piglets would get stuck. They'd wander in between the houses and they'd get stuck. And they'd start screaming their heads off. Wee! Wee! Like that. And I had already discovered that I could imitate all kinds of sounds pretty well when I was 5 years old. And on a farm, there were lots of sounds and mouse sounds and stuff. So I'm standing out there like a dumbass. out in the field, and I start imitating one of these baby pigs squealing in distress.
And
a mother sow rushed me. She came running at me with her, and they got big fucking teeth.
Oh, yeah, I've heard of them eating people or eating off arms and legs and shit.
Yeah, she would have ripped my leg off. Luckily, I ran to the pickup truck that was there. I jumped in the bed, and she jumped up in after me, half of her. Anyway, she got her front legs up there. She's clawing and snapping at me. And, man, I saw... I didn't see my life flash in front of my eyes because I hardly had no life.
Right.
But my dad came over and whacked it with a shovel, and that was the end of it. But, you know, that's, you know, 5 years old. I remember that really clearly.
Oh, yeah.
So I thought, yeah, sound, man. Don't fuck around with sound.
No. Or you're going to get the karma backhand. Yeah. Wow, that's a trip. So, in this, besides, you know, the pig sounds, was there musical instruments in this pad you grew up?
Yeah, there was when we moved there was an old piano there, and my mom started to restore it. She was an artist, an artisan, and knew how to do woodworking and stuff. So she started to restore it, and I started to play it, and I started picking out tunes and, you know, stuff I heard on TV and cartoons and songs and everything.
You're saying, Tom, you're self-taught? You didn't go through the lessons thing?
Well, I did here and there. They tried to give me lessons when I was about 12. That didn't work very well. I sort of learned to read music. I got the very rudiments. And then I just kind of studied on and off, went through some schools. And then,
yeah, let me ask you about school. Were you in the choir or the marching band or shit like that?
No, I didn't do any of that. And, you know, for a trumpet player, that's kind of a disadvantage because practically every brass player I ever meet, they just kind of take it for granted that you went through band in high school or college.
Right.
And I didn't have any of that. And
well, can I ask you, when you were young, the first record you bought with your own money?
Roger Miller, Dang Me.
Oh, wow, Dang Me, yeah. Well, he had a few hits, right, you know?
Yeah, I love Roger Miller. Yeah. I love that sense of humor, man.
Absolutely.
And he's just goofy and nutty. And, you know, for a country star, he was kind of sophisticated. He didn't dress like a hick.
Right.
And my dad hated all that kind of stuff. He didn't want his kids to be hicks. Like, he kicked me once for saying ain't.
Whoa.
He said, we don't talk that way in this family.
Okay.
Eventually, we got off the farm and got kind of back a little more suburban. And then... when I started high school, we moved to Taos, New Mexico, and that was a trip.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they got a big solar-powered radio station there, but I've never got to play there yet. One day. Can I ask you, first record you bought with your own money?
You already asked that, but...
Yeah, but I didn't get an answer. Dang Me! It was Dang Me! Fucking Damn Me! Damn Me for being so stupid, Tom. Okay.
Yeah, but I'll tell you another one. My sisters and I found this really weird, messed up record in what's that place, you know, the Salvation Army.
Yeah.
We found this weird record there called Delirium in Hi-Fi, which is kind of legendary now among, you know, audio heads because it has like some of the earliest tape manipulation and echo and shit like that. And this is the record, has the first instance. You know that, you know Twin Peaks, right?
David Lynch.
Yeah, David Lynch. Well, there's this famous thing where he recorded a guy talking backwards, and then he plays that backwards. So you get this really weird kind of disembodied voice.
Right.
That you can understand the words, but it's all backwards recorded. So this record, Delirium and Hi-Fi, has somebody singing that way.
Wow.
They recorded her backwards, and then they played the tape backwards when they made the mix, and that was the thing that really warped my mind, that whole record.
Was it kind of related to that, what was his name, Les Baxter, the bachelor pad kind of stuff?
Yeah, kind of, but with this weird
more
European
trippy
cafe music twist, because it's got polkas and marches and waltzes on it, and it's not really lounge music. It's
okay.
Just the weirdest shit.
Okay, but it made an impression on you, though. What about the first gig you saw?
Oh, the first gig I saw was Well, it's kind of embarrassing, but I got into Bach. So I got into Bach organ music, and there was this guy, Virgil Fox, who was very, very flamboyantly gay. And I really wanted, and he came through Indiana, so I, that was like the first gig I saw was Virgil Fox. They had a light show with it too. He had all these young hippies working for him. So he's playing Bach organ music, with this light show. But I kind of missed rock and roll. I, you know, when we moved to Taos, I fell in love with early jazz, and, all through college, I only went to one, like, big stadium show, and that was Carl and the Funkadelic.
Ah, great. Which one? Like, Mothership? I saw that tour.
It was right after Mothership tour. It was the Motor Booty Affair.
Motor Booty Affair, okay. Yeah, Flashlight and shit like that.
It was amazing. It was amazing. It was at the Denver Coliseum, and, you know, there were 20,000 people there at least. And it was so weird because at the beginning of every song, we were up in the cheap seats. At the beginning of every song, everybody would stand up and dance around for about 30 seconds. Right. Then they'd sit down and start talking to each other.
Yeah, yeah. That same thing happened here. And there was a lot of mint smell because, of, like, dust was big then. This is here in Long Beach across the harbor from me. Can I ask you, okay, so you're on the piano and stuff. What made you make the move to trumpet?
Miles Davis.
Ah, okay. Okay. East St. Louis guy. I think born in Alton, but across the river. So hearing a record, or did you get to see him play? I got to see him play once.
I heard records for a long time before I saw him. And I kind of worked my way up from the very earliest jazz all the way to Albert Eiler and shit on my own. And I just kept seeing stuff, and I go, well, this looks like the next step. This looks interesting. And Miles Davis was somewhere in there. And I heard this record, it's famous, of him playing with Thelonious Monk, and they play this thing called Bag's Groove, which is a blues in F. And there's something about Miles's attack of the note that almost sounds like somebody whispering in your ear.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And he used the mute and shit.
Great.
I think Bags was a nickname for Milt Jackson.
That's right. He had Bags under his eyes.
Right, and he played Vibes, and there's a Coltrane record, right? Bags and Train. I want to play something from you called Mound of Sound. Thank you. For Pedro Show. Started that chunk of music off with Mount of Sound. Now, Tom likes to, I guess he renames his name for each kind of prod. So this is called Tom Dill Solo Electronics. But he'll lighten us to more stuff about it in just a sec. I'm an extension cord for your love, baby, from Bahamas Prended. Grass Dance by Kendraplex. Then Tom Dill Solo 1989 with Tombo. Tombo is a Japanese word for dragonfly.
That's cool.
Maybe it's a coincidence. Okay. Port Sunshine from Hamburg after that ensemble. Yeah, they're good luck, right? Because they eat fucking mosquito babies. And then Growl Pops. That's a great title. Growl Pops. sorry, growl box from Tom Dill Solo Electronics. So tell us about these three things I did by.
Well, Mount of Sound was a collaboration, or came out of a collaboration with an author named Lisa Marganelli, who wrote a book about termites called Underbug.
The most populous animal on the planet, right? You know about that, because all our houses, they're chowing them.
Yeah. Yeah, and some of them just, you know, they live in the ground, and they form these weird...
Mounds.
These weird kind of... what's that word?
Like mounds, like big old mud castles.
Yeah, but at the center of the nest, there's this big mat of fungus. And the fungus, you know, lives off them, and they live off the fungus.
Right.
And, So anyway, she came out from New York and did a couple of readings, and I accompanied her. And she supplied some termite recordings. I can't remember the name of the person who recorded
termite
them.
Termite recordings.
It's a German fellow, but you can hear some of his termite recordings in there. And then some things that sound like termites are synthesized. And then, you know, I just kind of put it together into a collage.
So tell me about the first gig you did on trumpet. Well, for one thing, are you self-taught on the trumpet, like the piano?
I am mostly self-taught. I had like 2 years of serious study with real trumpet guys, and then a couple of workshops with guys like Leo Smith and Lefty
Boat.
Yeah,
Lotto. Yeah, a great cat, man. Inspiration.
Yeah.
I got to see him play a few times. Yeah, I think he's at Cal Arts here. In fact, he was mentor to some of the people that have been on this show.
Definitely.
Can you remember your first gig? Was it Man Alone, or was it part of an ensemble?
I was playing, like, ragtime piano for silent movies in Taos.
Oh, wow! Wow, so like kind of filler, but also interpreting what's up on the screen and shit?
Yeah, I knew, like, two ragtime pieces, and I knew how to play diminished arpeggios. So whenever it got scary, I'd play the diminished arpeggios, and whenever it was happy, I'd play the ragtime.
Right.
And I would like to apologize to all the people who were in the audience for those gigs.
And what kind of movies were they?
All the classics, you know, Buster Keaton, Charlie Chaplin,
Sonny Griffin.
Yeah.
But yeah, you made them new again, right? That's great. What about the first time on the trumpet in front of people?
Oh, that was in college. Some friends and I had a very bad jazz group. We used to play the Thelonious Monk song, Bemshaw Swings, only we called it Bemshaw Doesn't Swing.
Oh, that German word, far from grooving.
Far from grooving, yeah.
Right. Or like if you had too many... Well, not enough beers, but far from puking. Okay, so, and then the electronic thing?
The electronic thing came along in college, too. The school where I went to, Colorado College, as an undergrad, they got this huge grant from David Packard, so they built a whole concert hall building, music building, and in one of the rooms they installed the biggest analog synthesizer that was ever made, which is the Synthi 100 by EMS. It was huge, you know, all analog. And that's where I just started to get a taste for it.
Was it a whole room? Because there was this thing called Tonto, the Incredible Headband or some shit. You know about this? It was used on three of the Stevie Wonder records.
Right. Yeah. No, that instrument is like kind of, technically it's several instruments put together.
Yeah, that's
the EMS
right.
was one integral instrument.
Okay.
But it was that big, yeah.
And,
it was that big. And big tape machine, so I got my first taste of working with multi-track tape and stuff like that.
Okay. That's, there's nothing... 100% wrong with institutions, because there's no way you could have afforded that shit, right?
No. When I got my first synthesizer, frankly, pretty much my mom paid for it.
Well, and was it one with the keyboard, or was it one with just like oscillators and filters? And
it's very similar to the Surge I have now. It was all Surge stuff, which at the time you could buy as a kit and put it together. The PC boards were already populated, but you just wire those to the front panel and install all the jacks and knobs. So that took about 4 years to put all that together. And then I kept that instrument for another 15 years. And that's what Tombo was made on. So Tombo is trumpet blown through the Surge, with lots of filtering and frequency modulation and stuff like that.
Did you ever get into using the tape recorder, because you were talking about tape machine at the school, as an instrument?
I did, but I never had a reel-to-reel. I tried to work with cassette machines, so, you know, it's very limited, but I did a lot of cassette tape pieces, and I would do things like, you know, interrupting with pause button and re-recording stuff, and then trying to cover up the erase head so that you would get sound on sound. And it was all so lo-fi, I never released any of it.
Yeah, you know, there's a song on the end of one of those Dinosaur records where that's what Lou Barlow did. He called it Polito. And, you know, bouncing, bouncing, the hiss would, like, end up Bogarting whatever sound was on there.
Yeah, I did a couple of pieces like that. I took the quietest music I had in my collection, which was Webern's Opus 27 piano solo, and I re-recorded it, I don't know, many generations as loud as and overdriven as I could until it was completely just. And then the other experiment was taking Jimi Hendrix's All Along the Watchtower and recording that as quietly as I could. And that didn't really work.
Okay. Bobby Dylan, sorry. What about these growl pops, bops, growl bops?
I'm not sure what piece that is. Let me look at my notes.
It's a Watt for Peter show. There's no hard questions, no wrong answers.
Everybody wins. Is that what you're saying?
It's just an honor to have you aboard, Tom, really. We're at the end of the first hour, June 28, 2021. Watt Peter Show special guest, Tom Dill. Hold tough for hour two. June 28, 2021. Second hour of the Watt for Peter Show.
Thank you.
for Pedro show. There are some advantages to it, though, because you're always hearing new tunes, meeting new people, and playing new venues. So it's not all bad. Start second hour out, people, with Cassette 1982 from Tom Dill Solo. And then we had Echolocution from Euphotic.
Oh, yeah.
Help me out here, Tom.
That's all correct.
But, well, enlighten us to the substance.
Cassette 19A2 is just the second piece on the A side of Cassette 19, which that's mostly Eurorack electronics, which is just another format. It's all the same kind of stuff, oscillators and stuff. And so I set up like several layers of beats going at different rates and different numbers of beats, like a 9 against 8 and stuff like that. And then put this distorted trumpet over it. That's pretty much what that is. I mean, it's one of the few beat-oriented pieces I've done lately.
Yeah, well, I was going to ask you, is that's not your general way of composing? Like you set up a rhythm and then go on top?
Well, I do that kind of work, but usually when I go back to it, I'm just kind of bored by it. I just don't like periodic music, at least. I mean, I like plenty of pop music and stuff like that, but it's just not what I want to do. I'd like to do stuff that hasn't been done or isn't done very much.
Yeah, can I ask you, like, event-driven versus time-driven?
Yeah, I guess event-driven, yeah.
Yeah, because, yeah, what do we call dance or pop music, right? Very time-driven, right?
Yeah, you know what? Remember what Captain Beefheart said about that mama heartbeat? He just wasn't down with it.
No. But it's funny, he was the hugest blues fan in the world, and there ain't a lot of fucking, you know, fives and sevens and nines going on there.
Oh, well, you know, to my mind, he was the greatest white blues musician that ever lived or ever will.
Well, he had a huge knot. Have you read the Mike Barnes book on him?
No.
Yeah, it's incredible. I mean, you can follow that book because he talks about recording of all 12 albums over 17 years. Every song, and you can listen to YouTube.com and read along. And it's quite a trip. Yeah, this thing about he claimed he, you know, he wasn't doing a Howlin' Wolf thing, but he knew all about Howlin' Wolf.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Of course he did.
I'll tell you the funniest story. Jim Dandy from Black Oak, Arkansas was solo, and he wouldn't carry a band. So a guy I knew in Memphis was going to be in the backup band, and right before they go on stage, they get in a big old fight over whether Captain Beefheart was bullshit. This is Jim Dandy Madden from Black Oak, and I think it's because of the Howlin' Wolf voice. Because they both kind of used it, right?
Yeah, he did. Yeah, I wouldn't say he just, at least on his most well known later recordings, he wasn't just copying.
I don't mean to be like that. Like, here's the example. I mean, Tom, like I write a novel, and I don't invent one word. I use all the words other people are using. I still can make an original book, right?
Yeah.
That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah, well, if you listen to a tune like Electricity, when he does that.
Oh, yes. I love that.
That's pretty close to Howlin' Wolf.
Yeah, I love that. That's a great.
But the later stuff, you know, he's evolved it into different variations on that voice and other voices, you know, that weird kind of, kind of screaming.
Oh, yeah. Moonlight on the Mountain.
Scary.
But then Ashtray Heart is kind of a comeback to that. You crushed me out while I was burning.
I was lucky enough to see that band in concert.
I only got to see the 1980 band, right? There, Doc at the Radar Station.
They were so great. And they took all that weird Trout Mask replica stuff, and they swung the crap out of it.
Oh, yeah, different drummer. It's not John French, it's Robert Williams, right?
Yeah, not to diss Don French, except as a writer, he's no good.
Kind of bitter a little bit.
His Beefheart book, it's just like the same bitter stories over and over again.
Yeah.
I couldn't finish it. Anyway, the way that, what's that guy's name? Robert
Williams.
Robert Williams.
Not the artist man, but the guy, Johnny Rotten, beating
Judge Judy. Eric Drew Feldman and all those
guys. Eric Drew Feldman, great on the bass, man. In fact, they started with Candy Corn, and he did a bass solo.
So, about the time I was buying my Surge stuff, Eric Drew Feldman was, you know, he's in Beefheart's band. He's also working for Surge in San Francisco. So I kind of saw him. I didn't get to meet him, but I did meet this guy named, the guy named Easy Teeth.
Ramirez. Cliff Ramirez. He's a
no,
big...
not him. Oh. No.
Cliff Martinez?
No, he wasn't in the band. He was Beefheart's road manager.
Oh, okay. This guy I'm talking about was the drummer on Ice Cream for Crow, and he ended up doing a lot of movie soundtracks.
Yeah, that guy's fantastic. Cliff Martinez.
That's his name, Cliff Martinez. And he never got to do a gig because they did a video, and Hat Size Snyder went over to bass and had Jeff Morris Tepper on guitar. I want to play 21 Grand 2011.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
Hot for Pedro Show. That chunk of music started off with. Now, this is an ensemble here, right? Dill, Ingalls, Robert, Kahn, Moss Lang, Mueller, 21 yeah. Grand, 2011. Then we had something from Roscoe Mitchell. Great musician, man. Right? With Sandy Ewan, Damon Smith, and Weasel Walter. This is part 3 of 5. A Railroad Spike Forms the Voice. Just came out. And then Tom Dill with Tom Dill, people, without other parts in the name. but one word, of course. Hack Mitty Bagatellen 4A plus B.
Oh, yeah.
These titles. Do the titles come first or after?
Well, the name of the band, if there's a band or a project, that comes after the title.
Okay.
So Hack Mitty is the name of the project. Bagatellen 4A plus B is two pieces from the Hack Mitty Bagatellen series jammed together.
But this is you, this man alone, right? But the other piece is an ensemble. Tell me about the ensemble.
Yeah, that big six-man group was kind of an offshoot of a project I've done since about 2006 called Große Abfahrt, which is the idea of taking these Bay Area cats who all know each other well and have played with each other and improvised together and know each other's language, and then putting them together with a bunch of people from outside the Bay Area, usually Europe, and they all have their own language and way of playing together, and just seeing what happens when you have these two really strong kernels put together playing music all together, right? So you have three people who know each other really well on each side, but those two groups don't know each other at all.
Yeah.
So it's an experiment in this kind of social aspect of improvised music. And this particular group, these guys from Europe, they were, at the time, they were leading exponents, if you will, of what used to be called lowercase or reductionist type music. So there's big, big, big spaces in that music.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, I think the Slits had a song where the lady said, silence is a rhythm, too.
Oh, yeah. Right? I remember that song.
Yeah, cancer killed her. It's terrible. But that's a great line. I think it was called, yeah, in the beginning, a rhythm. Something about rhythm. But the idea of juxtaposing the personas like he did, it kind of a casting director for a trippy a movie.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I've always been interested in this kind of social side of improvised music. You know, you have a bunch of people together and we're sort of conversing and sometimes arguing and sometimes ignoring each other. And then there's this, you know, this idea of a shared language and a language that is maybe known but not spoken. All these kind of things kind of get thrown into that mix.
Trying to find words for something that actually happens. It's natural phenomena. And you're right about personas. I think sometimes we try to separate that, but music's an extension of your own personal expression.
Yeah.
Unless
yeah.
you jive and just trying to fool somebody. And John Coltrane said a real musician, they can tell when something's phony. Yeah, that's why I always play him at the beginning of my shows. Look, we're at the end of the second hour, June 28, 2021, the Dishwat Pedro Show. Special guest Tom Dill. Hold on for hour 3. June 28, 2021. It's the third hour of the Watt from Pedro Show.
Thank you.
Watch for Pedro show. Start off the third hour. Tender Buttons. This actually has a name, people. I'm going to prodge with that Tom Dillon, the name. It's entitled Fantasy 2017. And then we had something that Blake Edwards turned me on to. Big inspiration to me was Zev, seeing him in the 70s come play the Hong Kong Cafe at Chinatown here. And he had a project called Oons. And this is something from the Tivoli in San Francisco, 1981, part 2 of 3 that he flowed me. Says number one. Tell me about Tender Buttons, Tom.
Oh, so that's a trio that was formed in around 2016 with me and Gina Robert, whose name you probably know.
Yeah.
Who was involved in just a million projects here in the Bay Area and beyond. Really super talented composer, improviser, percussionist, electronic musician, organizer. And on piano is Tanya Chen, or as she calls herself now, Tanya Caroline Chen, who's from London. So she kind of brings that whole London improviser school sensibility. She studied with people whose names I've forgotten.
Like Derek Bailey, AAM, or stuff like that?
Yeah. As a piano player there. Anyway, she is big also in the new music world, so she can play all that Morton Feldman and John Cage stuff. But when she sits down with the piano, it's just incredible the concentration and focus and drive she brings to our music. Gino and I are just trying to hold on. So that is from our second recording. We did both at Fantasy Studios in Berkeley, which is now a historical artifact.
Right. The House of Creedence built, but never got to record there.
Yeah, and it goes way back. I mean, Bill Evans recorded there.
Oh, Pacific Jazz, yeah.
So that recording is going to come out this summer, I hope. We don't have a title for that piece, but it's going to be on our next album.
Oh, that's why Fantasy, it's a label. Or it's a studio.
Yeah.
It's a studio, okay. Label studio / studio. Saul Zance, yeah, John Fogerty, big fan, I know. Actually, I had Doug Clifford on the show a couple weeks ago.
Oh, yeah?
18-inch hi-hats. I wouldn't shit you, Tom. 18-inch hi-hats. And I got to ask him about that. Because I always heard that rumor. You know, I was... They only lasted, as a big band, 3 years. They did 6 albums in 3 years.
Jeez. Wow.
Yeah, I know. Different days. Of course, they were a bar band for 10 years before that, but no one knows about that stuff. So I want to play this thing here called Kokuo.
Kokuo, yeah.
And the tune's called Sustroon?
Yeah, all the titles on that were mine. They're all made-up words.
Okay. Yeah, I thought it was like some part of, right? Saskatoon, Saskatchewan.
So we talk about it before or after?
Okay, let's put it on now. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Watt for Pedro, last music for this edition. Kokuo was named Proj, a tune is Sustroon. Then we had Headboggle. He was on the show a few weeks ago.
Oh, yeah.
A W minus O plus Q minus H. These titles, you know. And then finally, Beauty School is the name of the Proj. The tune is The Makeout Room. Enlighten us, Tom.
So, Kokuo is an all-acoustic group. With Kyle Bruckman, who you should have on the show, man.
Okay, no problem. All the guests I have on the show are connects from other dudes. People ask me about the old days. I say it was about people. I think the new days is about people, too.
Heck yeah. I mean, I'm just getting together with people again after this stupid pandemic. I mean, just played 2 gigs in the last 2 weeks, and it's unbelievable. People are ready to get back together.
Okay, so let's hear about this acoustic band.
So, Kyle Bruckman on oboe and English horn. Kaneko Nishi Smith, she plays koto, although you hardly ever can tell what the hell she's doing. And another great Bay Area musician, Jacob Felix Hewley, who has been in a lot of different groups, some kind of extreme noise groups and some super quiet groups. And he's a great organizer too. He runs a series, a kind of a improv open mic thing up here called Doors That Only Open in Silence. So he basically
open in silence, but then you say he's part of the extreme noise.
Yeah, he's in a group called Ettrick, which is like kind of like a, I don't know. Yeah. It's sort of like Borbido Magus in a way.
Okay.
It's like they just play, and none of them play the instruments, and they play as hard as they can until they basically fall over.
Okay. Work the room, right? That's an old vaudeville concept.
He plays with a Norwegian group called Salt. And then, anyway, he's also in my group Beauty School.
Okay, tell me about Beauty School. What's Beauty School?
Beauty School is sort of my, as far as I can take, extreme noise. It's just kind of a power trio, electric trumpet, bass, and drums.
I like it.
And we improvise as long as we feel it's necessary. So that makeout room piece was, I was trying to goof on Donald Trump, and I said something at the beginning about totally, what did he call himself? A stable genius. So that's sort of the title, and it was done at the Makeout Room here in San Francisco.
Oh, yeah, that's right. It's Wyatt. Slow learner. I'm a slow learner. So, Tom, where can people find you on the internet?
DJLL, is it bandcamp.djll.com? That's where most of my stuff is.
Okay.
And then I've got my own website.
Yeah, what's that?
DJLL.com.
Yeah, we should spell that out for people. T-O-M.
Yeah, everybody always wants to add the I back in.
Right, right. TOMDJLL.com?
Yeah.
Okay. Go there because, and then, I mean, I love the way, you know, well, what's your idea genre? Because you say noise, extreme noise. I mean, I remember when there's all rock, maximum rock and roll, right? There's crust, power, yeah. Violence. What the fuck is this shit? Punk is the guy getting fucked in jail for cigarettes. Okay, I can go that far. But the other things, when you get into, you know, and being human is about nuance, right?
Yeah.
Not always being so stable of genius. Sometimes we've got little layers of... So what's your basic... Is music in your mind?
Yeah, and it's very hard to put music into words. That's, I mean, we're lucky to have music, because if we didn't have music, we'd have to only talk about something that was music that we'd have to imagine, and that would suck.
I think Mr. Mingus said it was like dancing about architecture or something.
Something like that.
Yeah, something like that.
But the music speaks for itself, and anything we say about it is a poor approximation.
Absolute, absolute. And especially labeling, right? Then all of a sudden we're
I've always struggled with that. I mean, improvised music more describes a method, not style.
Right, absolutely. That's a great point. It's not a style, it's a method, it's a technique.
So most of my projects are improvised, and you know, it results in quite a variety, I think, of different kinds of music.
Well, it probably matters a lot with the cats you're playing with, right?
Absolutely. That's the biggest thing. My way of composing is putting together a group and selecting the people, and I'm lucky enough to have this huge, deep bench up here in the Bay Area of people to draw from.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I can kind of relate, because being a bass cat, you know, you look good making the other cats look good. I love those kind of politics.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're an aider and abettor. You're the grout between the tiles. So, you know, and if you got, like you say, some vocabulary of tile, you got a big library to select from. Again, the cinema thing comes to mind, you know, the casting director. And then here's the technique, improvisation, that's the petri dish, and see what's going to fucking happen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You got it.
That's bitching. A big honor to have you aboard, Tom. Thank you so much, truly.
Oh, thank you.
And when you get new stuff, please come back on the show, and I will check out that oboe player. Write me an email about that, please. Safe seas, you brother. People, it's been June 28, 2021 edition of WAP Pedo Show. Keep your powder dry.